Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. I'm Shane Stetsony, he is Brent Smith. ERX Motor Park, the ERX Off-Road National, coming at you next here on the 2025 Champ Off-Road Tour presented by Brunt. Brent, I think you probably coined this phrase, but a Pro 4 war, I think that's what we have in store for us this weekend at ERX.
Oh yeah, I mean, geez, the tensions are so high. I mean, the racers are going to come out with their A game, fast flying track. We've seen the best racing come out of ERX Motor Park. I'm excited. I mean, it's a few short days away and it's very competitive, like I said, and halfway point is right around the corner.
Yeah, just looking at Pro 4 for round 7 and 8 here, you got the hometown hero, Andrew Carlson, making his season debut in the Pro 4. Always as tough as anybody at his hometown track. He tests there quite a bit. You know he's going to bring his A game, like you said. You've got RJ Anderson coming back into the Pro 4 field. I think a lot of fans still remember, I think it was 2 years ago, 2023, him and CJ, maybe some controversial contact, put CJ into the wall in the first round of that weekend, and then CJ bounces back and wins the next day. So we know that that rivalry can run a little bit hot. You know, ERX is such a competitive track and kind of brings out the best in everybody, but something about Pro 4 races also seem to kind of disintegrate and fall apart at the seams at ERX. I mean, Adrian Chenny was a winner there just last year. The last couple of years, Kyle Chaney and Paul Wolf have both led like half an entire race at different times. You got Cole Mamer and Mickey Thomas. They're both looking to bounce back after a tough Crandon weekend. So you're throwing all those elements onto this racetrack that we know, like I said, creates really dramatic races, especially in Pro 4. I don't think we'll top that Forest County Pottawatomie Community Cup. It would be really tough to top the way that race finished, but Pro 4 at ERX is like the special sauce, man.
It really is, and it's, like you said, it's going to be hard to top it, but I think the best is yet to come. That was just the start of what we're going to see to go into the final rounds, because we say it's a Pro 4 war. That's an understatement, because you said it perfectly. It's hard for a Pro 4 race to have all the trucks at the end fully competitive and healthy. Usually it's one, two guys that run away and hide. So I believe bringing RJ back, AC back, I mean, you have Henderson yet to really show a lot. He's got to win. Johnny Greaves is showing his strength. And I'm liking Mickey Thomas and Cole Mamer as well. I mean, I think we're going to see some great battles, and I think it's going to be more than just two this time. Not like the cup race. It's going to be four or five trucks duking it out here at ERX Motor Park.
You mentioned Jimmy Henderson and Johnny Greaves in the same breath, and like you said, they both had really strong weekends at Crandon in rounds 5 and 6.
Right.
But that rivalry, that the bad blood between them that seems to have gone on for, you know, the entire history of Champ Off-Road, seems like it's been quiet. At least since Wheatland. You remember they made some big contact there and ended up with Jimmy Henderson being out of the race early. Do you think that most of that is behind them, or do you think it's just kind of bubbling under the surface a little bit? Or does it depend on what kind of mood those guys are in on the morning of the race?
Yeah, what did they eat before they got in those trucks? And at the same time, hey, I agree. It's a very competitive class, but enough's enough. You can't be taking each other out. You can't hit each other. You got to move forward. If you want to run with CJ Greaves, RJ Anderson this weekend, and Mickey Thomas, Cole Mamer, you have to move forward. You guys, Henderson and Greaves, they can't play tag all day, because it's going to shear a tire. It's going to take them out of trying to go for that win, because, you know, you have the silent assassin in the group, but you also have CJ Greaves. He waits, he pounces on the right opportunity, and he's there 9 times out of 10. So if you're Henderson and Greaves, just knock it off. Honestly, I'm not going to point fingers, but I think if they get out and do their own thing, they're going to be right in that mix.
Yeah. And then, like you said, you alluded to this a little bit, some races this year, even thinking back to the opening round when Cole Mamer beat everybody else down and at the Show Me Off-Road Shootout at Wheatland.
Right.
Here and there, there's been some runaway wins. And, you know, CJ had one that was fairly easy at Antigo. The other one, he had Thomas, you know, bothering him the whole second half of that race till the very end. I just don't see a runaway winner in either Pro 4 race this weekend.
No, not at all. The track just creates such great racing. So, I mean, I don't think there's that opportunity where you're going to see a driver check out on anything. So I think you're going to see the strength in the first half, and that second half after the mandatory, it's going to be who's going to have their car healthy enough to go at that win, because you're going to have a healthy truck when you have this many great drivers in the class. I mean, granted, there's only been 6-7 trucks in the class. Now we're going to look closer to 10-11. It's going to be harder. You start in the back of the pack, you have a bad day, it's going to be hard to make up.
So CJ, Cole, and Jimmy Henderson are the only three drivers in Pro 4 to win a race this year. Out of those other guys that we mentioned, I think we mentioned everybody else that's going to be there. Who do you like to maybe stamp a win on this season while we're out there in Minnesota?
I believe the Wild Man, because just in the past, he's been up and down, but when he shows his strength, it usually is in the second half of the races and plus in the second half of the season. So I look for him maybe to get a good win to start the weekend. And if he's got his setup on point and he can get a good weekend under his belt, who knows? Maybe he could sweep the weekend. We've seen him do some crazy things. They call him the Wild Man for a reason, Shane.
Well, you asked me a similar question before that cup race at Crandon, and I placed my bet on Kyle Chaney, and I almost looked brilliant for doing that. I'm going to double down on Kyle Chaney. I think, you know, like I said, we've seen him lead laps at ERX. Similar track to Oklahoma when we were there a couple of years ago, and he led a lot of that finale race down there in 2023. I think something about this track suits Kyle Chaney. I think the positive momentum from having a good day in the points race at Crandon in round five, I believe, and then being that close to winning the cup race, it seems like the conditions are right for Kyle Chaney to get that first Pro 4 win.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the confidence, I mean, if he's following Instagram and all of the social media, I mean, 10 million people viewed him monster trucking Keegan Kincaid and getting second in the biggest race of the weekend. So, I mean, just as a race car driver myself, you could even just grab that as confidence, knowing, hey, I was there in the end, we had a good setup, it was fast, we were laying down some fast laps. Yeah, granted, I was 20-some seconds behind, but that's just what happens at Crandon. If you would have bunched him up again, I feel Chaney was right there to have that speed to duel with those guys.
No, it's all about being there at the end anyways.
Right, absolutely.
Well, another class that, you know, staying in the pro truck ranks, I think is going to be not just exciting this weekend, but what we've seen so far and what we're going to see the rest of this year, I think is going to be knockdown, drag out right down to the final round, and that's pro spec. You've got Nick Visser 5 points ahead of both Chris Vanden Elsen and Wyatt Miller. All those drivers have won races so far this year. Hemmer also has a win. She's fourth in the points, but 35 points back of that tie for second. That battle, that points battle, getting really, really hot. And again, super competitive class. How do you see that class playing out this weekend for round 7 and 8?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I think it's going to be scary for everybody else, because the Thriller Wyatt Miller, I really see him progressing each and every weekend. He's racing while we're just on the off time. 90% of other drivers are barely getting any testing time, so he's always behind the wheel. It seems like every time he gets in that pro spec, he is just getting faster and faster. Like, he's doing things right. I mean, Vanden Elsen, he's right there. He's throwing down wins again, and Visser's quick. I mean, like you said, Hemmer's right there. I mean, I can't tell you who's going to win. Like we say it 99% of the time.
It's Avery's hometown track, by the way.
It's huge. Yeah, and she knows every rock where it's located. So she might throw down a big W there as well.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me one bit. I'm also expecting to see another big step forward back toward the front for Dylan Parsons, who obviously has not had the season he wanted after the tough start down in Wheatland. Again, putting that further in the background, that big crash put it further behind him. I think out of those top five drivers, you could pick any three to finish on the podium, and the next day it might be three completely different drivers.
Well, yeah, and Dylan, he's putting in the effort, the work. I mean, the truck's back to normal. I mean, it really didn't get tore up that much, but his confidence is back, and like you said, it's been a couple weekends since that happened, so he's going to be right there. That truck's dialed. It's always on jack stands at Mikey's when I was there a couple weeks ago. He's just always prepping that truck, getting it ready, and he's underneath a great camp, right? Matt Gerald and all those guys have been around for so many years. He's going to be right there in the end of the season points. I mean, he's passed champion. He knows how to get the job done. He's not scared to go fast.
Looking at the other pro classes, I think something that's kind of been fascinating to me, we play up the manufacturer rivalries in the side-by-side classes quite a bit. You know, you've got Can-Am, you've got Polaris, you've got Yamaha. Well, it was Polaris sweeping all four of the pro side-by-side races at Antigo, and then Owen Van Epperen returns the favor. He swept all four just by himself, giving Yamaha four wins at Crandon. Do you think that the pendulum is going to swing back the other way? You've got, you know, Andrew Carlson running for Polaris. Jeb Boodle, of course, already swept in pro side-by-side. Colin Truitt has a sweep in pro stock from Antigo. Do you think the pendulum swings back the other way, or is Owen Van Epperen going to be really tough to tame? He's leading both of those classes, by the way, in the points.
Yeah, and he is, but it's hard to count out Owen Van Epperen. But again, Andrew Carlson, hometown track, he's throwing in laps. I don't care what you say and what you do.
Ronnie Anderson in pro side-by-side too.
Yeah, he'll be right all over the back door of Andrew Carlson. But Carlson put a statement down. If you remember watching social media, he was up on that podium at Crandon. He said, you know, I'll be ready. I'll be ready with my A game at my hometown track. And he's hard to beat. I'm going to be excited to watch him in Pro 4 as well. So he's going to be doing double duty, more track time, hometown, and he wants to win in front of his crowd.
Looking back at Antigo, we had 5 out of the 7 pro classes were swept by one driver. Pro Spec and I think Pro Buggy were the only two that weren't, if memory serves. I know Pro Spec wasn't for sure. Do you think we're going to have another weekend like that where there's a driver in some of these classes that's just dialed both days? Or do you think it's going to be a little bit more of a shakeup from day one to day two? Or I guess if you had to put a number on it, how many classes will we see a sweep in through the pro ranks?
Yeah, in the pro ranks, I mean, I believe guys like CJ Greaves, right? He could go on a streak. He's looking at 200 career victories. He could actually get the job done. I mean,
have to have a great weekend to do it. But yeah, he's now within that that window of could be this weekend.
Right, but I mean, you have guys in Pro 2, like look at Keegan Kincaid sweeping the weekend Crandon.
Right.
I mean, you could have Ryan Beat. I mean, even Johnny Holger, he's shown a lot of strength at ERX in the past. I mean, he's running strong in Pro Light. Pro 2, he's right there. Johnny's got a lot of great group of guys behind him, helping him out, getting that truck prepped week in and week out. So, I mean, it's anybody's game, but anybody can sweep. You just got to be there. You got to have all your ducks in a row.
I think given how competitive and chaotic the racing has been at ERX over these last few years, I think I'd put that number low on how many sweeps we get. I think
right.
If there was more than one across the 7 pro classes, I think I'd be pretty surprised by that.
Yeah, and that's what is so cool about ERX Motor Park. It creates some great racing, the sandy sections. I mean, you could screw up. Anybody can be a great race car driver, but it just takes one tangle in the field to cost you a day. You could shear off a tire. Anything can go wrong at any given time. I don't know exactly. You said it's going to be in the 70s and 80s. Granted, in the past, it's been just ridiculous hot there. So, like, hopefully that'll keep the engines cool and we might see some better racing.
Well, a quick check-in on some sportsman news and notes. These were some things that I found interesting coming into ERX Motor Park. Everybody knows by now that we love our kart classes. We love short course karts and mod karts. Just how much parity there are in both of those classes has been phenomenal this year. Short course kart has raced 5 times. They were rained out on the second day in Antigo, and they're going to make that up Friday after all the practice and qualifying at ERX, along with the other 2 youngest of the youth classes. But short course kart, 5 different winners through 5 rounds. Gabe Holcher, Riley Zahara, the Tolberg brothers, and Braden Bell. Mod kart through 6 rounds, 5 different winners. Dakota Akins, Wes Vandevort, Race Visser, Colin Pytle, and then Lincoln Monsager with the weekend sweep at Crandon was the 5th driver. Man, those classes, put them in the pro show, man. The quality of racing has been so good. It's been fascinating to watch those kids race.
Yeah, and it seems like some of those races, they are just in a file. You throw a blanket over them. They're so close together. They're so well put together.
Yeah, short course kart has had a couple like that this year where like the top 7 or top 8 were, like you said, nose to tail, like a foot between all of them.
Yeah, and it makes it so cool to call and watch. And I know back on Flow, you're watching at home all the time. It's these guys and gals in these classes are so fast. I mean, Race Visser, if he gets out front and doesn't make a mistake, it's hard to run him down. But having 5 different winners in 6 rounds, it's anybody's game. And before, usually when you've seen some of these names like Race Visser, in the short course cards back in the day, he normally won 5-6 races and would run away with it. Here, it's anybody's game. Dakota Akins, he's really, really fast. He's got a brand new motor going in as well.
I think what's been fun, especially from like 2 or 3 years ago to now, watching all those kids that have graduated from the short course carts and moved into mod carts, is much faster trucks kind of let the driver's personality show a little bit more, if that makes sense. Some of that you could see from when they were in short course carts or whatever classes they came from, like Race Visser, always super aggressive. That's kind of been his calling card for a long time. Wes Vandevort on the other side, really conservative, just tries to hit his marks, takes what the race gives him. But it's so fun to see all of them develop like that.
Yeah, they got their own little driving styles. And at such a young age, it's fun to watch. And it's cool to watch them develop into bigger and better drivers. I mean, we hear some of these kids go, I want to be in Pro 2 someday. I want to be in Pro Spec. Well, hey,
the talent's there.
Yeah, and they look at guys like the Thriller Wyatt Miller. He's such a young race car driver. I mean, Race Visser, Dakota. I mean, you got Gavin Plummer. They're all hanging out with Race Visser, so that's going to make them want to get in that class that much sooner.
Yeah, just it's a great sign for the future of this sport that we love. Well, another youth class, or I guess just one more youth driver I really want to talk about, Logan Fritzinger, a rookie in youth side-by-side, won the championship in the 570s last year. He's on a 5-race win streak. Don't look now, but he has been absolutely white hot.
Yeah, he is just unstoppable right now. I mean, once he gets out front, you cannot even reel him in. You need to get a rope to try to tame him down because...
Well, that's the scary thing, I think, is that it hasn't been by the hair of his chin. It's been he gets out front and then everybody's just watching the dust cloud disappear over the horizon as he takes off.
Yeah, it's like, who's going to get second place? But hopefully at ERX it can be more competitive, but he's looking to lay down another win, right? You're going out there trying to sweep, and he's another young gun that I'm looking to do big things in our sport, to move up through those ranks and move into different divisions. It's exciting, dude. We see so much young talent move forward, and that's why. I mean, a lot of guys and gals don't really care for the side-by-side divisions, but this is our future.
They're missing out.
Right. It's awesome.
Well, another sportsman class that is has been really intriguing this year, Pro-Am side-by-side. You got the top four almost at the halfway point of the season, top four separated by 17 points. Lucas Houle, Bill Berger, Matt Borschinger, Jared Jaden. By the way, Bill Berger, who very notably a couple years ago won a championship without winning a race, he's currently second in the points. His best finish so far, he has one lone podium finish, a third place finish. That's his best finish this year. He's second in the points. So again, those bigger classes, the bigger side-by-side classes, we talk about consistency. Berger's trying to do what he did 2 years ago, win another championship, maybe without winning a race.
Hey, and I was just going to bring that up too as well. When we're talking about Berger, he's never like dominating every race. He's just always there in the end. And when there that many cars are in the field, you can put yourself in position to gain some big, valuable points. And I believe he's doing that again. He might snap off a couple of W's. I know at Bark River, he's really, really quick. But that's what you need to do. You got to be consistent. But in any class, it's tough. I mean, Borschinger, we got to talk to him on the podcast. He is really confident. He's got one of the older cars in the field, but he feels he can be right there in the end.
Quietly, Pro-Am side-by-side, pound for pound, might be like the most loaded class in all of Champ Off-Road as far as like veteran, talented guys. Taking a glance at the point standings, Ben Heiting, we know how fast he's been. He's fifth in points. Jacob Blemke, Cody Jones, Trent Peets, Braden Kearns, all outside of the top five in points. Those are guys that we're used to seeing win races here and there, if not regularly throughout the course of a season, even going back to when some of them were in sportsman side-by-side. And really, the whole top 10, it's guys and gals that can break off a win at any time.
Yeah, and they're excited just as much as we are to watch it because... You know, who can get their car to the finish line first? And if you can keep it together, we talk about open wheel cars. We talk about the pro buggies. I mean, these guys and gals are the same way. I mean, you can't make that contact, take yourself out early. You can't even talk about points championship if you don't finish.
Well, another one to keep an eye on, sportsman side by side. By my count, over 30 cars are going to be in the grid. First race of the day, both days. Grab a cup of coffee, head to the hill, make sure that you don't miss sportsman side-by-side. 30 cars is a lot. You know, it's been a couple of years since we've seen that number creep up above 30. And when it was regularly that high, it was really, really chaotic, out of control racing, it seemed like. And again, what we see in Pro 4 at the very end of the day at ERX, typically over the last couple of years, is races that, like I said, they just disintegrate and every plan every driver had goes out the window. I think we're going to see that right away to start both days in Sportsman side-by-side. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and with that many cars, anything, we'll say it again 100 different times, anything can happen, and you're hoping that you get that invert where you can be up towards the front, because if you're in that points mix and you get caught up early, your day can be done so soon. Your weekend can be over. You see guys like Jesse Greaves, you take a big tumble in practice, you don't even get a shot at it. So you just want to be healthy, have your cars prepped. And with 30 cars, you better have everything nut and bolt checked and be on your A game, because it's not going to be easy.
Well, you know who makes it look easy, Brent? That's Amsoil. Make sure that you check out the Shop by Vehicle tool at Amsoil.com. It'll take the guesswork out of picking the best oil and filter combination for your vehicle. You can choose exactly what you need, get the right packaging option for your needs, and enjoy fast, free delivery directly to your doorstep. Visit Amsoil.com to learn more.
Our next guest on the podcast, Jordan Bernthal. How's it going, buddy?
We're doing good, doing good. Excited for this weekend at ERX coming up.
Hey, I do want to get to that. Obviously, you know, ERX being your home track, but you'll get a kick out of this. Obviously, we like to talk about every guest's kind of background, how they got where they are in off-road racing. I've been home alone this week. Last night I was watching old soda races on YouTube. Saw your dad in a Class 9 race, like 1994.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Send me it. I haven't seen. I always get to see Steiny and Scott Schwabe in most of them on the ones on YouTube that I see lately.
I was sending Brent pictures last night too of Mike Seifelt and Steiny. Much younger versions of those guys.
Boy, they definitely classic look stuff. A lot better now. I mean,
so, you know, obviously you come from an off-road racing background, but you've kind of had a long winding path to get behind the wheel of a short course car yourself. You've done a bunch of asphalt stuff, desert racing, kart racing, but, you know, kind of walk us through the steps from, you know, being a racetrack kid yourself to where you are now.
So first off, I grew up with, from a racing family. I am a third generation racer. My grandpa actually did the second ever Crandon brush run.
Nice. He would have raced against my dad.
Oh, no kidding. That's awesome.
Go figure.
Yeah. So I grew up in the off-road world, and then I've always just loved racing from the day I was born. And originally we started racing go-karts. Well, first off, my dad actually owned and created Pro Kart Indoors, which is an indoor go-kart track in Burnsville, Minnesota. So it's only about 45 minutes away from ERX. So definitely if people are there and they got some downtime, they can stop out. So from then, when I was basically 3 and a half, I started being able to go with him and just going to run laps. And so that was basically the best racecraft thing you could possibly grow up with, in my opinion. I got more laps than you could probably think.
Well, obviously that really shows how your future is turning out with your racing. I mean, to start that young, Shane and I always talk about it, right, Shane, that, man, if we were able to get our hands on a car at that age back in our time, sounds like a long time ago, it was, we didn't get a chance to do that growing up. So it's so cool to see how that made your progress that much easier.
Yeah, it did. But surprisingly, I did end up getting to the burnout stage.
Oh, really?
Well, so when we originally started, we started racing go-karts, but we also come from a motocross family. And so we were racing motocross and go-karts. I wasn't very good on two wheels. My brother was a lot better on two wheels. And it got to the point where it was just hard to do both. So we kind of had to make a decision. And I was probably too young to even really realize, or maybe I wanted to at the time. But so from probably like 5 to 9 or 10, we ended up only doing motocross. So I only raced mini karts, like what they call them kid karts or speedsters. I raced that like 1 year or maybe 2 years. And then we went to motocross, and then I took a break kind of after we stopped racing motocross, and I ended up just hanging out with friends playing soccer. I always raced at our indoor kart track, but we ended up just not racing until I turned 15 years old. And so when I turned 15, I got back into kart racing. And right from the start, we took off and we were competitive at the local and national level. And then within 2.5 years, I ended up running the national series for karting and then getting offered to do a open wheel test at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is called the Chris Griffiths test. And so I got to drive a USF 2000.
What is that?
A USF 2000 is about three, it's the ladder series of Mazda Road to Indy before you get to IndyCar.
Wow.
So it's the entry level series of the Mazda Road to Indy. And so we ended up trying to go into that, but the problem was you just needed way too much money to fund it. So then I ended up still going the asphalt road racing way, and I went to Trans Am TA2 because Leighton Reese is a road racing friend of my dad's for a long time, and he said that this was like the series to go to, and it was relatively affordable for at least what car racing is. And so we just signed up for one race, and we ended up doing pretty well, and so we continued on. And then actually the next race, my second race ever at Mid-Ohio, where IndyCar just raced, I ended up, I was out of like 35 guys, I was going into my last lap, and I was estimated time, I was probably going to be like P2 or P3. And I ended up having the brakes or the throttle stick on me and going into, I think they call it the hurry downs. And I went basically wide open into the wall. That took me out for a little bit. From then on, yeah, we just kind of continued the Trans Am path. It was a great time, great experience. I would have won Rookie of the Year, but I really didn't follow the rules, and we didn't follow the rules for Champ either, which was kind of a thing that I told my dad. I was like, we got to follow the rules. But at the time when it was still Sportsman and not Pro Buggy, when we first started, I think 3 years ago, that was the last year of it being part of Sportsman. So, yeah, we just jumped right in and got our feet wet, and it was the rest is history.
In the time that you were not racing on the dirt, when you were doing the Trans Am series and karting and everything, knowing that your dad had raced off-road, was it always kind of something you had your eye on, or how did that opportunity actually come about to jump back in and race a dirt car or an off-road car?
Yeah, no, it always was. So probably when I was anywhere between 10 to 15 years old, we would always look at short course karts. But the problem was, it was so much more popular on the West Coast at that time, and sure, to put all the money together for it, it basically was always a thought, but it never came to fruition. So that, yeah, I would say it was always a thought. And then after I stopped racing Trans Am because we just ended up not being able to afford it, I ended up getting a really cool opportunity to go race in Costa Rica. Because How Racing Chassis, he builds some of the TA2 cars, and he does oval race or oval track cars chassis. And so I ended up getting to go out there, and man, it was a wild experience of getting to explore different places and living a different way of life.
And how old were you at the time that you were doing all of this?
My first Trans Am race, it was in my senior year of high school, so 2015. And then I ended up racing, I want to say, until 2018, one full season and then two half seasons of Trans Am. And then I took probably a break for a year, and then I ended up going to Costa Rica, and then they ended up creating, it was called GT Challenge of the Americas, which is Central America. So I ended up going to Costa Rica, Guatemala, El Salvador, and it was supposed to end in Panama, but it just so happened that the first weekend of El Salvador was right when COVID was like really strong.
Oh.
And so we were actually nervous about like, should we even go? Like, what if we can't get back into the country? And that we ended up getting back. I won that race. That was my first ever car win in Central America. So that was pretty amazing. And I would just say everything that came before off-road racing was just incredible adventures and opportunities.
Man, what a background though. I mean, I've known some of your background, but now just listening, it's amazing to see what you've built up as your resume. And what you're doing in the short course program, it makes sense now so well each and every time we watch you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it's been my biggest thing has always been put me in anything. I'll drive just about anything. And I just love racing, and I just look forward to every opportunity.
Being that you were a racetrack kid, like I said, and you know, grew up not just at racetracks but racing on them. Now that you have young kids of your own, a nice family that you've started, how meaningful is it to you that you get to share that same experience with your kids and, you know, your brother and his family?
Oh yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, there's nothing compared to the fact that both me, my dad, and my brother all raced all each other in the same race multiple times. I mean, going into Crandon the first time and all three of us racing, that was a surreal moment that I'll never be able to forget. And so, and to think about it, to bring into our children, Cole and I's kids, we can't wait. So, I mean, I'm already figuring out when, as soon as Jace can actually get into a car. So
shopping for 200s.
We're not shopping just yet, but the idea is 100% there. He turns 4 in November, so we still got a little bit of time. But we ended up actually getting these mini carts at our indoor go kart track, and we are allowing kids 3 to 7 years old, which is crazy how young it is, and it's amazing to see how capable the kids are when you actually give them the chance.
When can Shane and I show up?
Dude, anytime. So,
come on, Shane.
Speaking of Pro Kart, we are actually having a, if you guys follow motocross, Jerry Robin, the Minnesota motocross rider, he ended up getting paralyzed in Supercross last season. And we are actually doing a FXR fundraiser for him on Thursday. It's open to the public. Anyone's welcome. And maybe some of the ERX crew can come down.
This will be out Thursday morning, by the way. So, yeah, so great opportunity for the off-road community to give back, as we love to do so much.
Absolutely.
Brent, what were you going to say? Stepped on you there.
No, I was just going to talk for you and I. Just when are we going to get a private session with Jordan Bernlors so that we could just show up at his track?
You guys tell me anytime. I'll make it happen. You guys have never been there, right?
No. I've ran K1 carts and stuff in my life around in Florida and California, but
yeah, we're not electric, we're methanol. So it's wow. about the most real you can actually feel with a go-kart. That has full bumpers and it's safe. The weight takes away like a full outdoor cart feeling. But man, you still get a good experience in the physics and everything.
What if you're chubbier like me? Am I gonna be slower?
we got weight boxes, bro.
All right. So I'm not gonna be at a disadvantage with it being heavier?
No. Okay. Well you will be, but we have weight boxes. But like anything, I mean, go-karting, it's typically everyone says about 10 pounds is about a tenth. So
eat your vegetables, Brent. We're gonna have a grudge match.
We're
at some point.
Start tonight, dude. It's on.
Brent's gonna be eating salads all weekend now.
Yeah, I was actually we were trying to figure out a weekend this last winter to try and put together a Champ Off-Road celebrity race and try and get drivers to come down if they're interested, but we ended up just having too many dates have issues. So that's definitely one of my main goals for next winter, is to put something together.
Yeah, keep us in the loop on that, because I will definitely make the trip out.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll broadcast it for you.
Right?
Yeah, there you go.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, man.
Well, no, because then we can't race it.
No, we're going to get out of the booth just for a little bit. Jordan's going to come in the booth, take over.
We do team racing, actually. So,
oh, there we go.
We'll do like 200 lap races with like 4 people per team.
What? 200 laps? How long is this track?
So it's typically about 18 to 20 seconds a lap.
Okay. You have a chiropractor locally after we're done?
Oh, there's lots.
If it's this winter, Brent, you got time to get in shape. Oh, you won't need one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Depends what time the chiropractic closes. But
I'm good. I'm not that old yet.
Hey, so eventually we'll get into the right now, but I want to talk to last year. And I know I've told the story during race call before, but down in Tech before round one, like the day before the opening round of the season, I remember you looked at me and you said, hey, I'm going to win the championship this year. And you went out and did that last year in 2024. You know, every driver has that goal every year, but what led to you having that much confidence in yourself and your program coming into last year that you really truly believed it? I want to be clear. There was no like conceit or cockiness about it either. There was a calm confidence about you, and then you went out and proved yourself right.
Well, did I really say I'm going to, or did I say the goal was?
You were just confident. It wasn't a bad thing.
I was confident, and I think the biggest thing for me is actually that I'm having more fun than I ever could think of. The off-road short course racing is, in my opinion, more fun than road racing. It's more fun than desert racing. It's nothing compares to it. And we've put in, thanks to my family, obviously, thanks to Jay Speck. He does all of our race prep. He does an incredible job, and we do the homework before the race, and then I just get to work.
So Jesse Greaves, he works on all your stuff all year then?
Yes, correct.
Okay, because he was up in the booth and he was letting us know what he was doing, but that's a lot of work and a lot of stress on him as well, hey?
Oh yeah, no, it's a lot. It's definitely a lot for him. And it doesn't help that he got folded up at Wheatland. So definitely, thanks to his dad Jeff, he's definitely been helping and having some other people help with. So and just with where we are in Minnesota, it's become easier and made more sense for Jesse to have all of our stuff and do the race prep because he knows his stuff, and we still really don't. We're definitely learning, but for us to be able to, we were able to come in and work with someone knowledgeable like Jesse right away. I mean, it meant the world for us.
What are you doing? Like when they have the cars, when he does, like when you're back at home, are you just busting butt working at a normal job, or are you still doing other things for your program?
Pretty much basically just busting butt trying to afford it. that's been the thing. My dad, he works extremely hard and we're very grateful, but we definitely have to work to afford the lifestyle.
Hey, so going back to last year, just a little bit more, you know, you went out, you started really consistent. You had a whole bunch of podiums in the first half, but at the end of the year, you just all of a sudden caught fire, ripped off a huge win streak to lock up the championship. What has to fall into place for not just you, but any driver to actually put together a win streak like you did?
Yeah, well, to be completely honest, the nice thing, which I haven't been able to do it just yet this year, which has been definitely bothering me, I was able to be fast qualifier for the majority of the races, and I drooped some pretty good pills, actually. I mean, I probably had a 6 or a 4 in there, but man, I feel like I got a few 2s. And I put myself in good positions at the start of the race, and it was basically just being able to be in the right position and capitalize.
I mean, I know you want to win each and every time, but you hear a lot of guys and gals in our divisions go, you know, if I'm in third and I know I'm there in the points in the top 5, I'm going to take that third. Are you more of a driver that, hey, this could be my last day, I'm going for the win? Or what's your strategy? I know you want to be consistent, but I know I want to win. I don't know what you think.
When I'm outside of the car, I might be like, hey, maybe I should just relax and not go for it here. But when I'm in the car, I mean, man, I'm giving it everything I can. So just like this weekend when I was following Mason, I definitely had to be aware of that. I mean, Mason is a great driver, and he's aggressive. And so if I go for a move and it doesn't stick, he's not racing the rest of the series. So, I mean, there's definitely times where you have to be a little bit mindful of who you're racing and what's going on. But no, typically, man, I just love winning. I mean, there's nothing that compares to winning. So, and losing sucks.
That was really close to you being one of the first drivers I've heard admit that every plan you have, every thought process you have kind of goes out the window once you strap in.
The
joke is that there's a light switch on the back of every driver's head, and when they put the helmet on, it flips the brain off.
Oh yeah, can confirm on that one.
Are you feeling going in this second half of the season that you have what it takes? Obviously your prep's right there at 120%, but mentally and physically as a driver, are you very confident going in this second half of the season?
Yeah, no, I definitely am. I have nothing but credit to give to everyone who's been up front. I mean, I can't deny it. I was joking with Michael Meister. After I won on Saturday, I was like, I really do. I enjoy seeing you win. I go, but not against me. But yeah, no, I mean, I feel good. To be completely honest, there's another guy you always have to worry about, and it's my brother, because he will sneak up in there, especially like he did last year at ERX to get his first win.
From where I sit, Pro Buggy is probably top to bottom, like the cleanest. You could say it's the most pure racing of any class in Champ. Part of that's because it's open wheel racing and you can't just drive over each other like sometimes you see Pro 2 and Pro 4 races fall apart and become that. But
yep.
Is it also just the mix of all the drivers in there? Like I said, from where I sit, that class just seems like it's loaded with just really nice guys.
Oh,
like
you got
Tony Keepers, who's always smiling.
You trust him.
You know, you and your brother, easygoing. Michael Meister is like one of the nicest people on earth.
Yeah, no, everyone's really nice, but they're not, they're all really fast too. Driving the open wheel you definitely have to be more careful. And that's one of the things that I internally try and work on all the time is to be a little more aggressive on making passes because, it's one lined and follow the leader when you have our cars. And so in order to make a pass stick, you really got to throw it in.
And especially with Mother Nature, the way it's been, Jordan, I mean, we've only had how many tracks where we've had two lines. I mean, for you guys, I mean, it's been a little bit better, but there's been races where, you know, if you don't make that aggressive move, you don't even have a shot at it.
Yeah, no, 100%. Couldn't agree more. That definitely is part of it. And that, like I said, that's one thing that I truly work on.
Do you think that buggy racing kind of demands a different skill set than truck or side-by-side racing? And maybe it's even closer to what you're used to racing on asphalt, where you're setting up a pass three corners in advance and not just moving a guy over.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely that part. I think it's more so a lot of times we're also close in speed that really a lot of times, unless you have someone make a mistake, it's pretty close. And whereas, yeah, if you have fenders, you can definitely go and throw it in. And if you bang a little bit, you touch a little bit, typically it's not too big of an issue unless you get flats. So,
but it helps that all you guys get along though. That makes a big difference when you can trust that person.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
There's too much money involved. I mean, especially, I mean, you guys know as prepping those cars and racing the cars and I mean, watching at home, it's fun to watch a crash, but when those open wheel cars make contact, it's usually not good.
Nope. That is definitely true.
When you're so used to driving the way that you have to in Pro Buggy, then when you go back up to the hill and you're watching Pro 2 and Pro 4 and you see them, you know, just moving each other off the racetrack here and there, does that like color the way that you watch the other classes race?
It just looks exciting.
Get your blood flowing.
Oh, yeah.
There's certainly times when you wish you could just give Steiny a nudge and move him out of the way, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Speaking of nudges, that Chain and Minner guy, he's been doing great, but man, does he destroy my bumper on restarts.
Hey, front to back is fair play, I thought.
Yeah.
You just got to ride that brake a little longer.
Jeez. Got to get the welder out, man. I haven't even told him I was gonna mess with him at ERX when I see him.
Just say you got mindered. I did that one time on a different driver, and they come up to us and they wanted to fight us.
who was that? I remember hearing about this.
Oh, Bowser, remember Shane?
Oh yeah,
Chris Bowser. He took my brother out Bark River for the points race, and my brother saved it, didn't roll over, and the next day I went and printed a sticker and I put Bowser, and at the parade, he had one of his guy come rip it off. One of his guys, and my guy pushed him out of the way. And Bowser's like, I know where you live. I'll find you. Now we're good friends, but I was like, I thought it fit well.
That's funny.
That's the difference between truck racing and buggy racing right there. So looking ahead to the task at hand, you're racing on your home track, the track that gave you, if memory serves, your first pro buggy win. You mentioned already your brother got his first pro buggy win there. Is there just like an extra comfort level being that you're racing an hour from your house?
Yeah, no, it's pretty great sleeping in your own bed. The track is phenomenal. A little hard to pass, but yeah, no, having family, friends, the environment and the mood is just incredible.
What do you think is the special sauce that ERX has that seems to make the racing there so competitive and so entertaining?
I think the track is awesome. I just wish it was longer. I think it'd be incredible if it was longer and had some different sections that kind of made it stand out even more. The split section is really cool. The double-double's awesome. Every part of the track is good, and I think it just breeds good racing.
I really do enjoy, and I agree 120% with you. I've never gotten a race at ERX Motor Park, but I've gotten a broadcast every time except for 1 year there, and I cannot explain it any better outside of the track. I tell my family and friends, I'm like, you gotta come there. Like, my twin brother Brock's never been there. I'm like, when you show up there and you watch practice, you're just like, man, that elevation is over the top. And I can't imagine driving it. I mean, you have the split lanes, you have the big flyaway jumps. And my favorite part's after the big flyaway where you go through that little S section. That it's so amazing how the cars and the trucks just lose the weight through that whole area of the track.
You're standing on the top of the hill, right?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Yeah. No, honestly, that might be my favorite part of the track.
Yeah. Kyle Duke said that was his like while back. And I said, what's your favorite part? And he's like, you first. And I said that. He's like, oh, yeah. To rotate it, to make it work up there is just nothing like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that the drop down little or jump down into the finish is so cool. The car is just completely, just to get it set up, you're just sliding it completely on the side. You're jumping it basically a little sideways. It's wicked.
Parts of it have to feel almost like a roller coaster, like the incline, steep declines, how often your car is actually not necessarily airborne, but just really light at the top of all those crests.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're getting big air, and the complete constant moving of the car is, it's cool. It's wicked.
If you could change one thing there, being a race car driver, what would you change other than being longer?
I'm not a race car driver, but I have a good answer for you, Brent.
That's fine. I want to hear yours next.
To be truthfully honest, I don't really know what it would take to make it easier to pass there.
Right. I mean, you can't really make it any wider.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I have to think about that, to be honest.
What about you, Shane?
They need to put in 7 or so light poles and then run pro racing under the lights on Saturday nights.
All right. So the track's perfect, right?
Everything looks way cooler under the lights.
It does.
That's cool. Yeah, that it and it would work there.
Okay, Jordan, we gave you 30 seconds. what do you think?
I mean, it's a good point. I mean, under the lights would be cool.
When Crandon was under the lights, well, after the rain delay this year, but also 2020 when the, you know, during the COVID summer when the spring Crandon was actually late September and they ran pros under the lights, that was like one of the coolest individual days of racing that I've ever seen at Crandon. So why not take that concept everywhere, right?
How many other races have you guys seen where a driver has been up on top of the car, like Keegan on Chaney, where they have won? Can you think of other ones?
I mean, I can think of times when that happened between two vehicles, but never at the finish line racing for the win.
Right.
Do you guys remember on Saturday Fall Crandon when Dave Mason went over the barn jump and he ended up,
yes,
yeah, and I hit him and I was on top of him, yeah, and I my whole front end was broken, and I remember I thought the car was completely done for, and my spotter Bo's like, put it in reverse.
Oh, I do remember that race now. I do.
To this day, that will be, they're all different. My wins have been different in like memories, but like after, when I literally got going and I was just trying to keep the car from going straight and the front tires are just going any which direction, and I was able to park it in the last corner and block Lorenzo, and as I'm going across the finish line, you can't even see, I can't even turn the car, it's just going straight.
Wow.
The crowd that I got to experience when I won that race, I can't wait to try and beat that, because it was insane.
Just the feeling of it going through your body, right? Just,
oh yeah, unreal. It was something like I couldn't even describe, because like, it felt like everyone there when we were doing the podium speech was watching. And I remember walking back with a trophy, and I've never had this happen. And I was literally like high-fiving like every single person, like within like where we were standing, all the way back to my trailer. It was insane, man.
That was better than the race itself, right?
it really was. I mean, the experience that I got to feel with that was crazy.
Yeah, I'd kind of forgotten about that race you were talking about last Labor Day weekend, just because of goldfish brain.
How can you forget? Come on, you only do a couple.
We call 20 races a day.
Yeah,
but
right? Yeah, yeah.
I do vividly remember that now.
Yeah, no, honestly, my Crandon wins have been very memorable. But to be honest, this last win on Saturday, when I was able to drop Meister from me, that really was special to me.
He's been a rocket ship.
Yeah, no, he definitely has been.
It's been fun to watch you guys go at it. I don't even know who's going to win next, right? This class has went over the top in the last 10 years, and it's been so fun because you guys are so talented.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the level was has really made itself higher last year. And once Meister got here, man, did it change a lot.
He's been doing that to various groups of guys in Pro Buggy for, what, 7 years now?
No, I know. And I can't remember. I don't remember what race it was. But Meister actually would give me a lot of tips within the last 3 years. And I think his wife one day said, I think we've given you enough tips now.
Well, when he came in, he was learning a whole bunch from Steiny.
Yeah, yep.
I guess he's paying it forward a little bit.
Yep.
You know, that was very much a student becomes the master kind of situation there.
Does that make it harder, though, Jordan, when you go up against a veteran like that? Because you know they have everything up their sleeve. So it's like you're trying to outsmart them. Are you trying to get by them as quick as possible? Or are you trying to be methodical and take a couple laps?
For how his pace has been? No, it to get in front of him. Just get in front of him.
Right.
I mean, I can't. I'm sure you guys saw. I was very, very, very upset and disappointed and sad when I got passed at Anago on the last lap, because I just hit a hole and it shut the car off just a little bit and gave him a run on the inside, and man, that one hurt.
And that's the margins, though, when the whole class is so competitive and so fast, is one mistake often makes the difference.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. No, and that's why it's so cool to see how much the game has even elevated this year.
Well, man, we appreciate your time with us. We just had a great time just checking in with you, and your racing career has been over the top, and there's a lot more racing yet to go this season. The second half is just beginning.
Really excited.
Yeah, best of luck to you at your hometown track, ERX Motor Park, here in just a couple days.
Yeah, thank you. Can't wait, man. We'll see you guys soon.
Well, with that, Brent, nothing left to do but pack our suitcases and head to the great state of Minnesota, just north of the Twin Cities, the ERX Off-Road National, round 7 and 8. Practice and qualifying day Friday, plus a couple of makeup races. Short course kart, the 170s and 200s, and 570 side-by-sides making up their round 4 race that got rained out. That'll be scheduled for 4 p.m. on Friday, and then we go live for sportsman opening ceremonies for round 7, 9:45 a.m. Central on Saturday. If you can't make it there, of course, find us on Flow Racing. Weather, you touched on this earlier, high 70s, low 80s on Saturday and Sunday. Maybe some intermittent rain on Friday.
We won't talk about it.
Especially later on into the night. But Saturday and Sunday look phenomenal. I've been wrong before, but I feel good about this one.
Yeah, there's been many a times I've been at that ERX Motor Park, and countless years we've had some nasty, treacherous storms go through there. And the drainage that they have put together, the Playsteads and the Carlson family have done a wonderful job. They have a lot of equipment, and we don't have to worry about it.
Great soil, too. The soil can take on a lot of moisture.
Right, and yeah, we're not even going to worry about that. We're in for some great, great racing. I'm very excited. This is one of my favorite tracks on the circuit. I love Bark River. I love Crannon, but you get a little bit of every track here. Hey, you got to saddle up. It's going to be good, Shane.
Hey, for my money, best racing on the whole national tour.
Yes, for sure, Shane. It is the best of the best, and we're going to have the best drivers in the world there, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Well, that'll be it for this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. Once again, he's Brent, I'm Shane, and we will talk to you again from ERX Motor Park very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.